3, 2, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Illuminati Social Club. I'm your host, Jason from Parma. This topic came up a couple weeks ago when I spoke with David Chafin, and we discussed the current problem with Christian nationalism in America and possibly even in Canada. But I had mentioned that people understand. I think I mentioned in there somewhere that, you know, people understand about as much about nationalism as they do about communism, and decided maybe I should have an episode on what people don't understand about communism. So
I'm the only communist, you know.
I brought in the only communist I know, Doc Pinko, Steve Cloutier. And before we begin, I just want to say, as the host of this podcast, I am not making any assertions about anything. I'm the host of the show. I am asking him questions. I am not going to say whether communism, socialism, capitalism, fascism, or anything else is right. Fascism is right, but not in the way you think.
Right.
It's way to the right. But I am not, I'm not making any personal statements on my own beliefs here. So, Steve, in a nutshell, what is communism? Or better yet, what is the difference between communism, socialism, and capitalism? His eyes just rolled to the back of his head really hard.
Was that the wrong question to ask? No. That's not necessarily the wrong question to ask. That's not a very easy question to answer. Capitalism is sort of grouped around the idea of, you know, profit, business, you know, economic markets. It goes to who controls the means of production.
Right.
And the means of production are just, you know, the factories, you know, all that kind of stuff. And communism and socialism are similar in the sense that they feel that the means of production should be controlled by the workers. Right. So, sort of like co-ops. Co-ops are kind of like that. I mean, I wouldn't want to go that far, but that kind of idea, the cooperative stuff where the people who are profiting are the people who are working for, contributing to, as opposed to capitalism, in which you get a kind of, how to phrase it, a capitalist. I almost said capitalist class, but that's
right.
That's my left-wingism coming in, where capitalism sort of controls the means of production. Owners control the means of production, and then they hire people to do the work for them.
Okay. So
that's in a very oversimplistic nutshell, because, you know, and I suppose the difference between communism and socialism is that socialism argues that you can make those changes through reform.
Right.
Whereas communism is a more revolutionary, you need to destroy the system, whereas socialism says you can work within the system to change it for the better, whereas communism says no, you can't, because the system is always geared towards capitalism, right? And so we must destroy the system and rebuild it in order to make things better.
Right.
But even that's an oversimplification, because somebody like Marx said you don't actually have to have a revolution, because the inherent contradictions within the capitalist system itself would lead to its own destruction.
Hmm.
He's wrong, but that's what he's saying. So, right. so that's the problem. So even saying that communists believe in revolution, that's not necessarily how that revolution comes about is different depending on what brand of communism you have, because communism is a kind of a monolithic thing.
Right.
You know, it's like you were talking about with David Chaffin about Christianity. You know, even his congregation, which is a far more liberal congregation, still has right-leaning people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so no movement is completely monolithic and coherent. And so, and communism is the same way. And there are a lot of differences of opinion within communism about how to achieve certain goals and things like that, you know, you know, the means. Like I there's even a speech that I have somewhere around here by Karl Marx, where Marx says that it may be possible to have communism without a revolution. But it would have to be in a place like England or Germany, where it's already highly industrialized and all that kind of stuff. So even the idea of revolution isn't necessarily a given within communist thought. It's just the idea is that people will not willingly give up power, so you'll need a revolution in order to do it.
Right. So that, yeah. So basically, let me see if I'm following this so far.
Yes.
Essentially, capitalism, business, you know, corporations own the means of production, whereas
yes.
in communism and socialism, it's treated more as an infrastructure. It's you know, the means of production are more, you know, they're owned by, I'll say, the government for the purposes, you know, I mean, it's owned by the people, but then, you know, the people
yeah,
are of
yeah.
the government. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, the taxpayer dollars pay for the means of production, which makes
yes.
it makes an infrastructure.
Yes. Yes.
So,
yes.
Okay.
Which is the difference between, say, anarchism and communism. Because anarchists, whatever the Sex Pistols told you, the Sex Pistols are great. But anarchy is not anarchism.
No.
Anarchism is not sort of lack of control.
Right.
Anarchism does not believe in that structure, that infrastructure. Right. You know, some of the, for example, I'm currently listening to a podcast on the American presidents, and some very early American presidents sounded a lot more anarchist in the sense that they did not want a strong central government. They wanted state governments,
mm-hmm.
but not a strong central government. And that's more of an anarchist. I'm not saying they are anarchists, but that's more of an anarchist idea. Whereas a communist would say have a strong central government, you know, that does all these things. Anarchist would say, no, don't have that central government, because that central government always brings tyranny. So therefore, we need to have we need to break down those infrastructures and things like that.
Okay. So why is capitalism is best, communism is worst? And I will answer this one first of all as a spoiler. The United States is not a purely capitalist society. The fact that one of the things that the GOP are trying to get rid of at this point is literally called Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
So do with that what you will.
You guys have a state park system.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
yeah, yeah, that is socialist.
That's socialist.
And how, you know, so, you know, capitalism good, communism bad, socialism also bad because, yeah. you know, socialism.
Yeah. I will get into
the far right in a little bit. So
sure.
just to prep you for that.
Sure, to make things even more confusing, all those national socialists out there. essentially communism became the I don't even say communism. A bastardized form of communism, we can get into the, why I say that later, became the main alternative to capitalism, right? Like, think of the Cold War, right? You know, we're both children of the Cold War. It was capitalism versus communism, right? And that's why communism becomes that kind of boogeyman, is because that's the one system that provided an alternative. And it was a direct alternative to capitalism. Whereas socialism, you know, sort of more reforming socialists aren't necessarily a direct contradiction to capitalism, because they will accept certain ideas within certain capitalist ideas in order to achieve their goals. So they're not like, you know, it didn't provide the ultimate alternative to capitalism, because if the capitalism is a problem, then socialism, which accepts part of the capitalist project, isn't the solution, because there's still capitalism, and if capitalism is a problem, even a little bit of capitalism is bad. And keep in mind, when these ideas are really taking hold, I know we talked about 1917 and the Russian Revolution, but in terms of sort of global communism, it's the Depression where these ideas really start to take hold. You know, in an era where people felt that capitalism had
Failed.
failed, and they're looking around for an alternative to capitalism, and then there's this place that is allegedly communist calling itself the Soviet Union. And so that becomes the natural response to that. Well, capitalism has failed, so how do we get rid of capitalism? Well, then there's communism. That's the only thing that's there.
Right. And that, of course, leads into later on the McCarthy hearings, which
Exactly.
that's a multi-part episode for another
Yeah,
day.
that's, you know, I mean, ultimately, was the Soviet Union spying on the Americans? Yes. Was it some janitor in Warner Brothers Studios? No. Right, you know, there were spies, there were Soviet spies, and I'll even say that there were spies in the State Department. But the lengths to which McCarthy went, went beyond what was there.
He was he was completely he was unhinged.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
he really was.
ultimately, his goal was not to stop communism, but to feed his own ego, right? You know.
So, all right, let's just go right for it.
Okay.
You listen to especially right-wing pundits and people like pseudo historians like David Barton and Dinesh D'Souza. I'm sorry, I hate bringing those names up, but the Nazi Party was socialist, and we can't have that. We can't have socialists like the Nazis.
Well, that was just the name of the party,
I know.
right? And yes, they were the Nationalist Socialist Party, but when Hitler took over, he completely changed it. He just didn't change the name. That's all. Right, you know, and again, this idea of socialist, I mean, ultimately you can't have a nationalist socialist, because a socialist by definition is an internationalist, right? So even the term national socialist is a contradiction in terms. But yeah, they weren't socialists, and you can tell, because who were they fighting? I mean, literally fighting on the streets with. They were fighting against the communists. I mean, literally. I mean, there were, you know, stories of like hand-to-hand fighting between Nazis and the communists in the 1930s, you know, in the late 1920s, early 1930s, you know, like really hardcore, you know, knives. It was almost like the Jets and the Sharks, right? These kind of two rival gangs just wailing on each other. You know, and so yeah, it's in the same way that Marx talks about the dictatorship of the proletariat. The word dictatorship is unfortunate. And even that's a kind of translation from the German. So, because he wrote in German rather than English, because he was German, you know. So, you know, it's this these terms that unfortunately have been coined that sort of detract from it. And this is not even speaking as somebody on the left. This is somebody who studies literature and language for a living.
Right.
Right. This happens all the time that words are used, but they're not used correctly. You know, they're and like say with the Nazi Party, they just didn't change the name of their party. That's all. They just took over the National Democrat National Socialist Party and just didn't change.
Right.
The name, that's all. Right,
but I mean that obviously that gives fuel to the, you know, to the right wing that's you know, it's look, socialism, it's in the name, and it's like yeah, but you know, using socialist in the name, you know, may have attracted people to their cause that, you know, otherwise would not have. You know, they called themselves the National Fascist Party. They may not have taken off.
And you know, it's just like as you know, and I'm sure other people listening to this know, there are people who claim to be Christians who are not. Just because you claim to be something, just because you're the National Socialist Party, does not mean you're a socialist.
Right.
And they were nationalistic. That part of it was
and we correct. we have people in the U.S. today who are they say they're Christian nationalists, which you know is frightening as hell.
And you know, on the right, you hear a lot of the same kind of language. Like, for example, cultural Marxism. That's a Nazi term. They didn't use Marxism; they used Bolshevik, because Bolshevik was kind of the name rather than Marxist. But you know, you heard the fascists and Nazis talk about cultural Bolshevism all the time. Right. You know, and you get all these kind of this kind of language on the right that you can kind of link to fascist movements in Europe in the 1930s, like Donald Trump's, you know, draining the swamps. That's Mussolini. Mussolini talked about draining the swamps.
Did Trump ever talk about making the trains run on time?
Probably. Probably.
Or at least the subway, you know. Where do I want to go from here? You know, we've talked about the boiled down, definitions of the three. We've talked about Nazism and the fact that it's not socialism. Could socialism or communism work in either of our countries, U.S. or Canada, today?
Do you think?
I mean, in your opinion, I know.
There would have to be a lot of changes. There would have to be a lot of ways, because part of the problem is like this. Think of it this way. Think of it in Canada. And I always say, I occasionally say this in class, and I don't know, students never pick up on this, when I always refer to Canada as a quasi democracy.
U.S. too is quasi democracy.
Because if you look at Justin Trudeau, now I have no problem with Justin Trudeau. You know, as a person, this is not a personal attack on Justin Trudeau. I'm just using him as an example because he's the prime minister. I would use whoever was the prime minister. I'm just using him as an example. I mean, Justin Trudeau is the prime minister not because he was elected prime minister. He's prime minister because a group of people got together and elected them their leader. You know, and we do not vote directly for Justin Trudeau.
Right.
Right, he's just the leader of the party with the most seats.
Same here. In the U.S., we don't vote directly for the president. We vote for electors, and that's why the Since 2000, no Republican president has won the popular vote because of the Electoral College. Because a state like Wyoming has 3 electoral votes, and those 3 electoral votes represent what, 200,000 people each?
Yeah,
because I think there's only like 600,000 people in Wyoming. And California, where you have tens and tens of millions of people, they have, I think it's 55, and it represents, you know, each electoral vote represents like 1.3 million people.
Yeah.
So yeah. You see where the problem is here.
Yeah. And in Canada, now I don't know the exact numbers, but if you look at the last 10 elections, mm-hmm. no prime minister, whether a minority government or more majority government, has gotten more than 40% of the popular vote. I probably should look it up. I don't know the numbers specifically, but they're always kind of around sort of 37-38%, mm-hmm. right? Harper might have gotten a little bit higher. Stephen Harper, when he the Conservative Prime Minister before Trudeau, he might have gotten a little bit higher, but you know, when you've got 37% of the voters voting for one party, and that party is a majority,
mm-hmm.
then how can you claim to be a democracy? You know, and again, I'm not saying that the vote's not important. The vote is definitely important. Mm-hmm. But looking from it like from a communist perspective, as you probably want me to do,
yes,
what that tells me is that there's a structural problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's a problem with the system, right? You know, just it's probably even weirder in Canada, because I know you have a two-party system.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a two-party system.
Right.
But it's the same two parties that keep getting elected.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, at least it's the Democrats and Republicans. Oh, occasionally you get your Ross Perot's and
right.
stuff like that.
Well, that's few and far between.
Yeah. You occasionally get those independents.
And Jill Stein.
But for us, we've got, you know, I mean, there are 3, well, actually 4 if you count the Bloc Québécois, but they're never going to form a government because they're only in Quebec, and so therefore they literally can't get enough seats to form a government. But they can form the official opposition, which they have in the past, right? So the fact that with the Bloc Québécois aside, because they're very much a sort of a political provincial movement rather than a federal movement.
Right.
Putting them aside because of that kind of difference, it's still only the Liberals and the Conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I mean,
with
apologies to our friend Candace, you know, you forgot the Green Party in there, but
well, yes,
right.
Of course. Sorry, my apologies. because they do, they actually do have a member of the legislature mm-hmm. in Ontario, as you know. Yes, apologies, Candace, the Green Party. but the fact that those two parties, the Liberals and the Conservatives, that tells me that there is a structural problem,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of what communism looks at. It looks at the structure.
Right.
Right. You know, and comes to the conclusion that, you know, not necessarily that voting isn't wrong or you shouldn't vote, because Marx always said that you should just vote. Feel free to vote. Just do whatever you want. Whatever you need to do. But the fact that the voting system always brings up the two people, the two same parties.
Mm hmm.
Shows that there is kind of a structural problem, and Marxism and communism tries to deal with that structural problem rather than fighting the kind of what we think is kind of like the party politics.
Right.
Right. You know, the idea is that it doesn't matter who is the leader. It will always bring out sort of a capitalist. So get rid of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter, because the system will bring up another Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The person at the head doesn't matter,
mm-hmm.
because there are political structures that, you know, will always lead to the Conservatives winning or the liberals winning.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean that other parties can't win. Like in Nova Scotia, we got a weird thing where we had a one-term NDP government. But these kind of structural issues that we and I don't want to oversimplify the problems. I just don't want to say, you know, it's just the voting system that's a problem, because there are a lot of other problems as well. But that's what communism does. It looks at the structural problems rather than the platforms of the two parties. It looks at the structure itself, saying, okay, well, why do these two parties always win the elections?
Here in the U.S., voting, it's more democratic when it comes to cities, counties, and even the state. You know, we directly vote for our state representatives and even, you know, our federal representatives, however gerrymandered things are. Look at the state of Ohio sometime on a congressional district map. And you'll see what I'm talking about. So what else? Where else can we go from here? I mean,
I could say things like about 90% of what people know about communism is wrong.
Such as, let's see, communism is godless.
I mean, really,
in the grand scheme, an economic system is godless. An economic system doesn't have, is not a religion.
And the majority of communists are atheists. I'm an atheist.
As am I, as I have stated a few times now.
Although I'm not an atheist because I'm a communist.
No.
I became an atheist first.
Okay.
Then I became a communist.
How did you become a communist?
I don't know. I just got to a point, and this is going to sound really pretentious and stupid, but I just got to a point where I realized, am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yes, you are.
I just got to a point about 30 years ago where I just realized that everything I'd been taught was complete and utter bullshit.
Okay.
And so I went on this kind of, it's almost going to sound mystical, this kind of journey of self-discovery. I hate to sound all new agey, and I can hear our mutual friend Oliver Rock's eyes roll very hard. So hard he's probably got a migraine now.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Oliver. But we'll send you some aspirin.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. To kind of break down all those kinds of things that I was taught. And as that happened, obviously you're looking for something to kind of replace that with, because I just didn't want to become, a nihilist or anything like that. It's like, I realized that I wanted to kind of do something and contribute to the world and stuff. And so, it was like, where could I find these kind of ideas? And that's why even my communist beliefs aren't necessarily orthodox.
Right.
So like I said, no self-respecting communist party would keep me in the party for very long. I also have this problem with authority. So it became that kind of thing of ideas that I liked that I sort of brought in as I was kind of looking at myself and saying, what do I believe? Right. Because, I tried Christianity. I was raised like you. I was raised Catholic. Mm-hmm. So I did the Sunday school stuff and, I tried that. And I'm not blaming Jesus, because Jesus had some good ideas. But I just the way all the stuff, the theology and stuff was being taught to me, I just didn't like.
Right.
Like, for example, I have no problems with somebody being homosexual.
Same.
I have no problems with gay marriage.
Same.
I have no problems with transgendered people.
Same.
Right? And the church that I was in at the time did. Right? I was okay with women being priests.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, as you talked about with your pastor friend there, David Chafin, the early church was very communist.
Mm-hmm.
In its kind of outlook, in the true sense, not necessarily in an economic sense, because it wasn't an industrialized society, but it was very equal.
It was communal.
It was communal. Women could preach. Women could mm-hmm. be bishops, right? You know, it wasn't this kind of authoritarian thing.
The early church, they really didn't embrace Paul yet.
No. Well, yes. I mean, even Nietzsche says Paul was the worst thing that happened to the Christian mm-hmm. church. Because, you know, he was really the totalitarian. he was the autocrat. And then, you know, and even a lot of what we say is Paul wasn't really Paul.
No.
It was just people writing as Paul.
Yes.
Sympathetic to Paul, writing in his style and kind of sort of expanding on what he did, what he said. So even to be fair to Paul, even a lot of the things that we think that are Pauline, mm-hmm. or Pauline, I'm not sure quite
Pauline.
Pauline, there we go, is not necessarily Paul himself.
I guess we could say it's the original Paul is dead.
The original Paul is dead. Mm-hmm. Paul is dead.
Somebody else, yeah. So somebody else was brought in to replace Paul.
A lookalike,
yes.
from an early Christian cover band.
Yes,
was brought in.
shout out to Katie Jean.
I'm not Paul, but I play one in a cover band.
So, I typed the phrase "Why is communism?" or I guess it's a question: "Why is communism wrong?" into Google.
Ooh, good.
And at the top of the page, it simply says this, and I will read it verbatim, and I quote, "Communist Party rule has been criticized as authoritarian or totalitarian for suppressing and killing political dissidents and social classes, so-called enemies of the people, religious persecution, ethnic cleansing, forced collectivization, and use of forced labor in concentration camps."
Mm-hmm.
That would you care to respond?
Well, I mean that's the other thing. I mean, I've told people this, and I think I mean even said that just not too long ago. 95% of what everybody thinks they know about communism is wrong, for two reasons. One, they've heard anti-communists speak about it,
mm-hmm.
right? And two, they've listened to Stalinists,
right?
Because that, what you just said, mm-hmm. that's Stalinism.
What I just read. Yes. Please, let me,
sorry,
you know.
Sorry, yes. What you just read that somebody else wrote.
Yes.
Let's be clear. No, I realize, sorry, yes, it's not what you think or what you said.
Right.
What you read somebody else said, that's Stalinism.
Hmm.
And that's always been the split within the left is, and I've had people, you know, like I said, I've never belonged to a party. But people have tried to recruit me, right? And you know, people come and they meet me, and I realize that I'm being interviewed. it's like you know when you're being interviewed, and it's like, mm-hmm. You know, and I don't give them the answers I want. I don't feel it necessary to support the Soviet Union because, as I said before, the Soviet Union, if it was communist at all, and I doubt that, was a bastardization of communism.
Hmm.
Because Marx always said, and this is the part that most people don't realize about Marx always said that communism had to start in a place like England or Germany. And he also said maybe Holland. He wasn't sure about Holland. He didn't know enough about Holland, right? But he knew a lot about, because he was German and he lived for a long time in England, because he knew those two countries. And the reason he said that is because the means of production were controlled by people of that nation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Russia could not, for one reason, there's a lot of reasons why he argued that a place like Russia could not have communism, is because most of the capital invested in Russia was foreign.
Mm.
So they could just pull out, right? You know, mm-hmm. like you know, the workers can take over the means of production, but the capital is owned by other people, so it's useless,
right. Right?
And this is the other part, right? This is the part of, now, don't get me wrong, Marx got a lot of things wrong. I'm not, you know, because he's a, you know, late 19th century guy, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and he's writing in his time period, and he gets things wrong because he's responding to what's happening at that time.
Right.
One of the things that he also said, and this is why he didn't think it could happen in Russia, was that you needed what he referred to as a bourgeois revolution. You needed a liberal revolution, right? You know, you mm-hmm. could argue that the American Revolution was a liberal revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And what he means by that is sort of local business people, local capitalists decided to take power into their own hands,
right?
And break down the kind of aristocracy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, that kind of idea that when he was writing there, of course, there was a lot more monarchies and a lot more monarchies that were autocratic, absolute monarchies. So what he was arguing was that those monarchies had to be destroyed by a bourgeois liberal revolution, like the American Revolution,
mm-hmm.
right? I would argue that was a liberal bourgeois revolution because you had a bunch of planters and plantation owners, mm-hmm. you know, and local people sort of saying, no, we're going to take control of our own stuff and throw off the yoke of the British Empire and the British monarchy.
Right. You have nothing to lose but your chains.
Right. Exactly. And what that also would do, this is more, this is also the bit that people leave out, was that it would instill in a nation an idea of democracy. And so therefore, when the communist revolution came, however it came, when the communist revolution came, there would be ideas of democracy already in it. And this is the fundamental thing that people, I'll say, get wrong, either lie about Marx, is fundamentally he was he believed in democracy,
mm-hmm.
right? And so he believed that kind of liberal revolution was important because it would instill ideas of democracy, so that people then carry those kinds of ideas over into the communist revolution, and the Russian Revolution did not have that. Right. And again, I don't want to go too much into it, but there was a kind of 6 month period where they had a kind of a liberal democratic government, and people like Trotsky and Lenin didn't do anything because they knew Marx said that this was possible, mm-hmm. under Alexander Kerensky. Then they realized that Kerensky wasn't going to do what they wanted him to do, so then they overthrew him, right? You know, added to the fact that, you know, the First World War is going on. One of the reasons why the Bolsheviks got a lot of support is because they said they would get Russia out of the war. Kerensky didn't get Russia out of the war. So there were all kinds of these things going on. But ultimately, my point is, Marx said communism would fail in Russia. And I would argue, and I'm sure conservatives will be annoyed at me, but also people on the left will be annoyed at me for this as well, is that he was right. That what happened in Russia was not communism. All they did is they took one form of totalitarian government and replaced it with another form. Mm-hmm. of totalitarian government. It's just that instead of the czar, they had Stalin. and his kind of cult of personality, you know, and there was a cult of personality for Nicholas II, the last Tsar, and all those kinds of things, because under sort of orthodox Marxist view of communism, it needed that kind of little bit in between, right?
Right.
That sort of liberal revolution in which liberal democracy ruled, and Marx believed that it needed to stay for a bit, right? Like he didn't have any plan. I mean, that this is the other thing that people think is that, you know, Marx had this kind of plan for what the communist world would look like. He didn't, right? In fact, there's an a book which I actually have a copy of. If I don't know if you can see it. There we go. It's hard to see.
Yeah,
it's called Socialism, Utopian and Scientific by Frederick Engels, where he attacks utopian socialists because they were idealistic, you know, and they did not want to be sort of these grandiose idealistic socialists, you know, promising this great, brilliant future.
Right.
Because they were focused on examining the structure. So all of those things, the 5-year plan, all that stuff, you know, Marx and Engels kind of get labored with that. But they had no plan for what the communist world would look like. You know, they didn't want to, because they thought that was pure fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things that they were always clear of is like, we don't know what's going to happen, because society is always changing, history is always changing, things are always in constant flux, and you can't predict the future, right? So so that's why, you know, when you have this kind of liberal revolution, he never said, you know, you need 10 years of liberal revolution and then you have the communist revolution, because every society is going to be different. And so you needed this sort of long period where there was what we might now refer to as liberal democracy, that broke down all of those absolutist monarchies. And only then, after establishing ideas of, you know, parliamentary systems and you know, democracy, only then could a true communist revolution happen.
Right.
Which is why he thought that it would happen in Germany or England, because he saw they already kind of had that. I mean, they still had monarchies up until the First World War, of course. And England still has a monarchy. Germany no longer does. Right. But he saw the institution of the parliament and the Reichstag in Germany, the parliament in England, as that kind of liberal revolution. So he knew that those two countries – ideas of democracy and things like that could be instilled enough in the society that it could be a successful, they could have a successful revolution.
So question, are there any communist states today?
No.
No?
No.
Some would say Cuba, but no.
No. No, 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 no. Okay. Castro was not a communist. There were people around him who were communists.
Mm-hmm.
His brother, Raul, was a communist. Che Guevara, communist. Fidel Castro was really a Cuban nationalist.
Oh, okay.
And the only reason he allied himself with the Soviet Union was because the Americans wouldn't ally themselves with him. Right?
Right.
You know, and in fact, and it becomes very highly ironic considering the Cuban Missile Crisis. When Kennedy was first elected, there's evidence that Castro thought that this was a good thing, because he thought that he and Kennedy could kind of ease tensions between the two countries.
Right.
Of course, it didn't work. But because Kennedy
didn't?
Was... Yeah, because Kennedy, because, you know, then they hired Oswald and killed him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, allied with the mafia and the aliens and the reptilians and, you know, all those clone people.
Well, okay, we are on, you know, this is the Illuminati Social Club,
of
so you got to, you know, you got to bring all those up. So thank
of
you
course,
very much for bringing those up.
No problem, no problem. Happy to contribute. And there's a there and nobody knows what happens. There's this really interesting thing, and I always thought there was a really great idea for a play or a film about this. Maybe a play more than a film, but there's this meeting that Che Guevara has with Fidel Castro. Very good friends. Mm-hmm. Go through the Cuban Revolution together. They're literally fighting side by side with guns and all this kind of stuff. And there's this moment where Che Guevara kind of begins to realize that Fidel is probably not the communist that he thought he was. Mm. And there's this moment where the two of them, and nobody knows what happens to this day. Nobody knows what was said, but they kind of went on a walk together. And so they go on this walk. I forget how long it lasts, 45 minutes, an hour, something like that. And when they come back, Che Guevara decides to leave Cuba and go to Angola. Allegedly because Fidel has asked him to go and continue the revolution in Angola. What I think what happened was that the two of them had this sort of very frank discussion, and Che Guevara decided that Fidel Castro wasn't really a committed communist. And he knew that if he stayed in Cuba, because Che Guevara is very popular at this time, Fidel's probably more popular than Che, but Che is perhaps the only real rival to Fidel. And I think they made a deal because I think Che Guevara decided that his friendship with Fidel Castro was more important. And so he left because he knew if he stayed that they would end up in a kind of civil war, a kind of Trotsky-Stalin kind of thing. And I really believe that he decided, no, I want to keep Fidel as my friend. And so I'm going to leave because if I stay, there will be conflict.
Right.
You know, and the Chinese, well, they're Maoists, right? You know, that's, you know, not necessarily communist, again, because, you know, I mean, because we keep coming back to Marx. Marx is kind of, and the reason we remember Marx is because he's kind of the chief theorist who kind of, like, he writes the Communist Manifesto.
Right.
And so Marx felt that a place like China wasn't industrialized enough for communism to take hold.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So would you, and let me see if I can phrase this right, and I might have to do a little explanation here.
But sure.
Would you equate, so the way anti-communist and anti-socialist, you know, view the Communist Manifesto as, like, you know, the holy Bible of communism, would you rule that, you know, would you say that's as accurate as, like, the creationists looking at Origin of Species by Darwin as the, you know, like,
yeah,
the Bible of, well, I'll say atheism, but, you know,
yeah, no, I wish we, yeah, I,
it,
yeah,
it, you know, because Origin of Species was the beginning.
Yeah.
And from there, like, you don't even need that book anymore to understand biology.
Yeah.
Because we've made huge, huge strides.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the other thing too. And when I teach Marx and when I teach Darwin, because I sometimes teach both of them in class, I always begin by saying Darwin did not create evolution. Marx did not create communism, because there were theories of evolution long before Darwin came along.
Yes.
Like Darwin's own grandfather, Erasmus, believed in evolution. What Darwin gave was a kind of logical system that worked. And they went, oh, that's how it works. Right. Oh, finally, somebody who's explained it in a way that makes sense.
And you know? Marx did the same thing with communism. Explained it in a way that makes sense.
Exactly.
And, you know,
because the French communists came to him and said, we need a manifesto. We need somebody to just kind of write down what our ideas are. You know, and there's a famous phrase. I haven't been able to find out where he said it, but there's been this famous phrase that goes around, or statement by Marx. I've never been able to pin it down where it is. When people came to him and said that they were starting to refer to themselves as Marxists, he said, "I at least am not a Marxist," because he saw himself as a communist, and B, communism predated him. Right, he joined the communists, not the other way around.
Right,
right. And Darwin's the same way, right? Yes. Darwin doesn't invent the theory of evolution.
No,
he just writes it in a way that makes sense.
Darwin was not a Darwinist.
No, exactly. You know, and he just wrote a system through scientific study and all that kind of stuff that made sense. That everybody looked at it and went, that makes sense. You know, and same with Marx when he writes the Communist Manifesto. The French communists just said, we need something to hand out at our rallies that explain what we mean when we say we're communists. So he writes the Communist Manifesto. Right.
So there's one more topic, but I honestly think it's a bigger topic for another episode. It splits the line between Marx and, well, communism and biology, and that is Lysenkoism, which is I believe his name was Alexander Lysenko.
Yes.
He was in charge of crops for the Soviets, yes. And I'll just boil this down real quick. Basically, he believed that plants would grow in the communist way, where,
yes,
you know, you plant them closer together and they'll build each other up. Except there's one problem: plants ain't communist.
No. Communism is an economic philosophical system.
Right.
not a biological system.
No. No. Plant your plants 6 inches apart, not 2 inches apart.
Yeah. See, and things like that. You know that meme where it's Captain Picard and he's sitting on the bridge with his sort of his face, his hand in his face. When I hear that, I picture Marx like that going, "Oh man." Right. Stop saying stupid shit like that. Because Marx was very clear. He was an economist more than anything else. I mean, right. You know, he wrote philosophy, but he saw himself as a philosopher second, but as an economist. He didn't see himself as, you know, some kind of political leader in many ways. You know, he didn't see himself, you know, as, you know, talking about these kind of communist ways and things like that. He was just a guy who was looking around and examining the society that he was living in.
Right. So, I got really nothing else at this time. You know, I kind of have to digest a lot of this.
Sure.
I think our listeners do too, but you know.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I'm sure, you know, if anyone listens to this, they might have questions.
Sure.
So, you know, hey, where should they find you?
Well, you know, all hate mail should go to at Oliver Rockside. But you can talk to me. I almost said at Scarborough, dude. that would have even been funnier. You can catch me at Doc Pinko on the Twitterverse.
You could find me at AlienCG. You could find this podcast at Illuminati Pod. I've been trying to be a little more active there, and as you could tell, you know, four weeks in a row now, you've had episodes.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
One was an old episode. Yeah, granted,
you had to give Brent residuals on that one.
Yes, I did. Brent, the check's in the mail. it may not convert to Canadian dollars, though. I'm sorry.
That's right. He's in Hamilton, isn't he?
So. Anyway, folks, as Karl Marx famously said, don't believe everything you hear on the internet. Have a good week, everyone.